The American military, with its own history of segregation, is very much a part of the racial reckoning that is going on in the country right now. There are calls to rename bases named after Confederate generals, and branches of the military are moving to ban the display of the Confederate flag. But service members are getting a different message from their commander-in-chief, President Trump. Joining us now is retired Admiral James Stavridis, who also served as NATO's Supreme Allied Commander. Admiral Stavridis, welcome back.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Jeremy.
Well, how much work does the military have to do on the issue of race? Would you say more than other organizations, less, or about the same?
I think we have got plenty of work to do, but we've come a long way in the military. And if you go back to our period of time in the Second World War, we still had very much a segregated military, utterly segregated. We turned that corner, I think, a little before the rest of the country. By the 60s, we are a desegregated organization. Today, we have four-star African-Americans. We have four-star Latinos. Within the uniformed military, we've made a lot of progress. The Navy just named its newest nuclear-powered aircraft carrier after an African-American former cook named Dory Miller. Who won the Navy Cross at Pearl Harbor, at the Battle of Pearl Harbor. It's just an example of, I think, the services are paying attention to this issue. But we still have instances of racism. We still have pockets of concern around the military. We're going to be working at it like everybody else for a long time to come.
Well, you say that there are still pockets of racism. Apparently, people have still been able to display the Confederate flag in the military. Now, the Navy is working on a ban of the display of that. And General David Berger, who's Commandant of the Marines, spoke with ABC's Martha Raddatz on Sunday, and she asked him about the Marines' ban on Confederate flags. Let's listen.
This is not an attempt to erase history, but the bigger symbol is the things that draw the team together so that we can operate with that kind of implicit trust. We have a flag. It's the American flag. We have the Marine Corps colors. We have things that unify us. Anything that gets in the way of that is a problem.
How hard do you think it's going to be to ban Confederate flags in the armed forces?
It will not be hard at all. First of all, in my career for 35 plus years, I just can't remember seeing the stars and bars, so to speak, the flag, the Dixie flag up anywhere. So I don't think it's a big deal. But to my earlier comment of pockets of racism, I think there's a strain of white nationalism that runs through pockets of the military. You see that in polling data that the Military Times does, for example. So again, we've got work to do, but this is a layup. This is a no-brainer to get rid of the Confederate flag. And I think you'll see not only the Navy, I think you'll see the entire Department of Defense do that in the next several months.
Well, what do you think about the fact that you've got right there in that clip we played an American general appealing for unity, even as the commander in chief is stoking racial divisions? Is that confusing to service members?
I think it is, and I think it's deeply unfortunate. And the one thing Americans historically have looked to the presidency for is unification, is a leader who can transcend the moment. Those are the great presidents. Think of Franklin Delano Roosevelt leading us through the Great Depression, coming out of, by the way, the Spanish influenza into the Great Depression, and as he becomes president, and through the Second World War. He brought the nation together. That's the kind of president we need.
Beyond the debate over the Confederate flag, there's also the question of renaming military bases, which would be significant. There are a lot of them named after Confederate generals. What about that? Do you think that that's going to be a heavy lift for the military to start renaming all those bases?
Not in the least. And again, I think this is a layup. If you look at General Berger said it, we're in the military, ultimately, we're an organization that values above everything else teamwork, working together. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is 1.2 million people who get up in the morning and put on the same outfit. They call them uniforms because we want to be together. We want to even look like each other. So in a case like this, these Confederate bases are not unifying us because significant members of our force find it offensive. And frankly, the idea that we would have bases named after generals who fought against the United States of America. We certainly don't have a base named after General Erwin Rommel, who was the great Nazi general in the Second World War. He was a terrific general, exceptional warfighter. We're not going to name a base after him because he's a great warfighter. I've heard that argument put forward in terms of having bases named after Lee or Bragg or Stonewall Jackson. It's a mistake, and it's a mistake that we can correct. And the Congress sees it, by the way, on both sides of the aisle, and has sent the president a defense bill that is going to help the military unname those bases. It's time to do that.
What about the issue of leadership in the military? You mentioned that there are some, but that you could name all of the black members of the military with 4 or 5 star ranks on two hands. How does the military reckon with that?
We need to do better, and this is something I've mentioned before, at moving along our minorities. And it's not just African-Americans. It's our Latinos, who represent 15% of the United States population, more than the African-American population. And we need to be looking out for our Asian population as well. All of these minorities, in my view, need to be better represented. The way to do that is to get them into the mid-career jobs that lead to those flag ranks. That has to happen as a result of mentorship, just as it does in the civilian world, just as it does in the academic setting. When I was dean at the Fletcher School, you have to work hard to get people in position in the middle of their careers so that they can then step up to those leadership roles later on. Mentorship is the key.
Okay, so you've made the case that it should be done and that it is hard work. Then my question is, does the military have the bandwidth to tackle this issue right now, given the pandemic and all the threats that exist that have not gone away because of the pandemic, from Russia to China to terrorism?
Yes, the military has the ability to do this because these are fundamentally different tasks and different muscle movements, if you will. The skill sets and the work that we do in order to prepare to conduct prompt and sustained combat operations, that's what the law charges the U.S. military with doing. The work to do that is a discrete set of tactics, techniques, procedures. Alongside that, we're running a big HR department, if you will, 1.2 million people. But we have specialists who do that, and we have leaders who are perfectly capable of focusing on their warfighting responsibilities at the same time that they focus on taking care of the force. And throughout the course of my career, I've seen so many of our best leaders are the best warfighters, but they're also the ones who take the time to mentor people and bring along others. I'll give you a practical example who you will know, and that's General Colin Powell. He's someone who was a terrific combat leader who also was an instinctive mentor. And I was lucky enough to be someone who was mentored by Colin Powell. That helped me in my career. We have the leaders who can do both.
Admiral Stavridis, before we let you go, I just want to ask you one question while we have you, which is, what would you say is the number one threat facing the United States right now?
I will surprise you, perhaps, but the thing that kept me awake at night when I was Supreme Allied Commander of NATO was not Afghanistan, Libya, the Balkans, piracy, Russia. It was cyber. Just as we have been surprised at our vulnerability to this pandemic, we are quite vulnerable and not thinking enough about how vulnerable our cyber systems are, and they touch everything that we do. And we are vulnerable there. I don't think we're paying enough attention, exactly as we did not pay sufficient attention to the pandemic. We are not paying enough attention to the cyber threat.
And it's just about as complicated as a crazy new pandemic that we had never heard of before. So
exactly.
We'll see if we start paying more attention to it now. Admiral
Indeed.
James Stavridis, former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, thank you so much, as always, for joining us.
It's my pleasure to join, Jeremy.